The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Mix Radio. We're open line through till one. Whatever's on your mind, call 66 13 68, text 166177, WhatsApp 166177, or email studio@manxradio.com. This coming Monday, Onken MHK Rob Callister was due to be on Man in Line in his capacity as Minister for Health and Social Care. And the invitation extended subsequent to Mr. Callister's departure as Minister for Health and Social Care. At the moment, Rob Callister feels it's not the right time. It's been a very difficult couple of days, so he won't be on Man in Line on Monday, but he will be with us at the start of December, which isn't too far away. But Rob Callister's going to be on Man in Line Monday, the 12th of December, obviously as a backbencher. And Onken MHK, former chairman of MUA, was a trustee of Manx National Heritage, been in enterprise, been in infrastructure, been in DEFA, and was previously the Minister for Health and Social Care. But the events of the past couple of days have unfolded and will continue to unfold. And I know Phil Gorn, who hosts our two political programmes, Perspective and Agenda, has extended an invitation to the three political members in health and social care, to Joni Farragher, Michelle Haywood, and to Tanya August Hansen, to come on and to talk about what Mr. Callister talked about in his open letter and the circumstances and the events within the department. But it seems, and remember when Theresa Cope, the boss of Manx Care, was on Man in Line a few weeks ago, saying now that'll be her third minister. Rob Callister was her third minister. Mr. Hooper is now back in. I think she's had four chief executives. So now you get the feeling of what it's like being inside Manx Care. But the situation continues. We'll see what happens. And Man in Line will be there at the centre of it, as will Phil Gorn. I've absolutely no doubt. Julian's on with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. I went on the online webinar, online discussion thing for Morgan and Morgan Wind Farms last night. Some interesting information came to light. Some of it probably some people will know. First of them was that the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company is not a statutory consultee, as it doesn't come within the jurisdiction of the UK Planning Act of 2008, but is considered an important player in this. The other thing that was interesting was they are saying they're going to need floating substations, which are going to be 65 feet high and 50 acres each. So 65 feet high and 50 acres across, and whatever, something vast like that. Anyway, the cables for the northern one, the Morgan and the Morecambe, are intended to come somewhere near Penwortham at Preston, Lancashire, which would be close to the Ribble River, which has got a lot of protections around that. It's a key breeding spot for Atlantic salmon, native species of Eurasian otter and white-clawed crayfish. And it is supposedly one of the top three seabird estuaries in the world. I asked a couple of questions, which they did try to answer, but not with anything definitive. One of the questions I asked was, Walney Wind Farm has got a capacity on its nameplate of 1 gigawatt and needs 73 square kilometres. But the Morgan and Mona one they said yesterday was 3 gigawatts. So that would be three times capacity, but I asked them why it needs 11 times the surface area, but there was no sort of firm answer to that. They were saying they weren't sure exactly what they're going to need, so I don't know whether that's something in the future where they're going to put a lot more, because they mentioned putting in an additional 40 gigawatts, which would signify to me the biggest turbines you can get at the moment are about 15 megawatts. So that would be 15s into 40,000 would be 2,600 odd turbines, if they're going to go, if that's what they're saying they want. But that probably would be in the future. And the other question was related to what I asked, what I said to you yesterday about Ørsted and Sark with their rodent populations. So I asked them, is there any mitigation plans for puffins, guillemots, razorbills and kittiwakes coming to the island through the migration patterns from across? And they said they weren't sure. I did mention that yesterday you mentioned about the tip speed of the blades in relation to birds. Yeah. I did have a look at the specifications for the big turbines, the new ones, and they're running at 324 kilometres an hour or 200 miles an hour at the tips on the big ones now.
Well, nothing can withstand one of those clouting you.
That's right. I do have a question, though, that I'm just wondering if somebody might be able to ring in and ask, because I'd like to know what the definitive answer to this one is. It relates to the thing about the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea was put into place in 1994. It's got 168 signatories, including the UK, which basically agree that territorial water boundaries are 12 miles. Now, this grants innocent passage to vessels. So, you know, we've been hearing about things like the Strait of Taiwan, and the Americans have been putting their warships up and down because of international waters they're allowed to, and nobody can tell them not to. There is another allowance for something called a contiguous zone, which is a further 12 miles, which would take it out to 24 miles, but it's to enforce four key areas of law, which is pollution, taxation, customs and immigration. So if you think about it, say it's 70 miles between here and Liverpool, and these things are slap bang in the middle. You've got 70 miles, and we've got 12 miles of territorial waters, and the UK's got 12 miles of territorial waters. The bit in the middle is international waters. So I'm just wondering the legality of sticking wind turbines and making money off the seabed when it's technically within international waters, especially in light of this right of innocent passage.
Now, do you think the Isle of Man government is going to enforce this? Because obviously the government is, and you were saying about the fact that we can't appeal because it just doesn't come under our jurisdiction. And bluntly, nobody's going to take a blind bit of notice unless we start making any noise. So that means there's going to have to be a government department that will make some noise.
Yeah. But, you know, you mentioned the other day that you don't have the right to a view, a bit like housing planning, but you do have right of amenity. And when you start putting, I mean, when you add in the Morecambe one, you're talking about 850 square kilometres of wind farm that you won't be able to go through, which is slap bang in the middle. Now, that's not just going to affect Liverpool, because obviously you've got Liverpool to Douglas, you've got Belfast and Dublin from there, but then you've got Birkenhead to Belfast, you've got Heysham goes to Douglas, Belfast and Warren Point, and then you've got all the private vessels as well. Mm. So there's a whole spider's web of routes coming out of, you know, going across this zone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sea route is, of course, of commercial advantage to Heysham and Liverpool and Birkenhead, but that sea route's vital to us.
Yeah, and Belfast and Dublin. But my point is, what is the legality of planting these things outside of the 12-mile jurisdiction of the UK's waters? I mean, if we said, right, we're going to stick, you know, 100 turbines 20 miles off the Isle of Man, somebody might not like that, especially if they might say, well, you know, it's international waters, you can't stop us from navigating. And it's not just those boats. I mean, there is a right of innocent passages, it's known. I think it's Mare Liberum from the 1958 convention.
Well, somebody's given them the nod. I mean, this is Energy Baden-Württemberg, isn't it? It's a German company that's behind all this.
Yeah, but can they override international law? I mean, you know, if you've got the right to safe passage, if you've got, let's say they put 2,600 turbines in, that's quite a big barrier for people that are in that are trying to navigate with oil tankers and things. I mean, you're just asking for trouble in a big storm and your engines go off. I mean, the amenity side of this might be something that needs to be considered before you can just start plonking 850 square kilometres of turbines in the way. And it just, you know, the amount of damage to the seabeds and bringing the cables ashore, in some ways, I mean, this is just my opinion, but this is kind of worse than the Industrial Revolution, because that was big at destroying nature, but we haven't got the excuse of not knowing the consequences.
I've never heard anybody advocating from perhaps any organisation, any political party, green organisation, I've never heard anybody advocating on behalf of the seabed and potential damage to the marine environment, just like I've never heard anybody advocating on behalf of the birds, the migratory population, and the damage that's going to be done. So it would seem at the moment that wind farms trump all other cards, Julian.
Well, maybe somebody just needs to just ask a few questions. The legality of international waters, just shoving things in the sea, blocking safe passage, which is supposedly an amenity and a legal right in international waters. I mean, perhaps the question just hasn't been asked yet, because I haven't heard anyone else say it. But it occurs to me that, you know, if you it's like you putting your rubbish on somebody else's driveway, you know, it's like, or in the middle of the road or something, you know, somebody might just have to just put their foot down and say, hang on a minute. And if they've got the right to their contiguous extra 12 miles, then so have we, in theory. So we could say, well, actually, we've got a right to this bit as well. So at least you could push them out back a bit, because the talk from yesterday was that they're going to be pretty close to our 12-mile territorial waters. So they're going to be four or five times closer than those huge ones you see in the distance over at Walney.
I got a note in from Andy. Thank you, Andy, who just said, perhaps wind farms in the Irish Sea, the same as putting the oil and gas rigs in the North Sea when oil and gas rigs get put into international waters. Presumably, it will be the same sort of legislation as those.
Yes, but they're nowhere near as a potential danger to shipping. I mean, if they're talking about putting 40,000 megawatts in, 40,000 megawatts, and the turbines are 15 each, that's thousands of turbines. You're talking about taking up, no wonder they want 800 square kilometres at least, because you're going to need that sort of area. But that then becomes health and safety then, I suppose you could say.
What was the take-up on this online discussion last night?
They said that because you could only text in on a Q&A or an email, so I think they had so many people. I mean, I don't know how many it was, but they had so many that they were only taking individual points texted in at live over the Zoom app.
Well, I'm just.
So I don't know how many it was.
Well, I'm trying to think. There's a big array off East Anglia, which I think they're talking about 300. I think they've got over 100 units operational off East Anglia, which, of course, Norfolk being flat, very flat, you can see for miles. But I think they're talking about 300 off East Anglia as well. So presumably they're into, and that's Scottish Power that's doing that. So presumably they're into the international legislation. But this is the future that we're all marching to in lockstep. Presumably, they've sorted it out and they'll be able to get this through.
But if they're talking about getting 40 gigawatts extra out of the Irish Sea, that's going to be nine times that size, it right on our doorstep.
Well, it'll be too late when they're there, Julian. So it's presumably, well, we'll try and find out from government if there's any pushback or indeed any opinion on it, Julian. Sorry.
International waters. I think that might be something interesting from a legal point of view, because there are lots of United Nations conventions on it.
Okay, thanks for calling today. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
All right, 21 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. Lots of follow-up, and certainly as far as the wind arrays are going to be. So, Graham, thanks for your contribution. By the way, Graham, if you'd like to give us a call, is that McWilliams or White? One of the two, anyway. But, Graham, thanks for that. Give us a call and give us your opinion. It'll be lovely to hear from you. Bonzo's now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello. Yes, listening to Julian's contributions on offshore wind, and this business about seabeds and international waters. Well, waters aren't seabeds. As you can see from the North Sea, much of which is international waters, of course, but it's populated by Norwegian and UK-licensed oil and gas rigs. And the reason for that is because there are various conventions about the use of seabeds and whose bit of seabed is where. Essentially, there are issues about going to the continental shelf, the edge of the continental shelf, where then it sort of goes down into the bed of the Atlantic and such like, and where there are shared areas, there are various agreements about divvying up the seabed. The seabed, as far as we were concerned, of course, before we bought the rights to the seabed in, when was it, 2012, that was part of UK, and that was part of Crown Estates. Ireland, of course, had their own separate arrangements, which is why I think they sort of divvy it a halfway line down the down the Celtic Sea, and then various areas around, sort of going down through, past the Bristol Channel, and then into the western approaches. So that's how that works. It's not a question of territorial seas.
Okay, and is that in perpetuity, Bonzo?
That's that's certainly for the length of time these international agreements.
So it's not a lease; they're in perpetuity, or does it have to be verified at a point in the future?
They're issues of sovereignty.
Okay. Right. So, well, that's got that sorted out.
Then there's all the issues about how many wind turbines can you get on the head of a pin? And the idea of putting 40 gigawatts into the area, which I find a bit strange. I think maybe an additional four. But the area in itself, they have this wide area which has been leased because of the fact that that they know that there are going to have to be negotiations about where things go. So it's not as if every square inch, mind you, they'd like it to be like that if they could. It's not that this is kind of baked into it. They know that they can't have every square inch, and they're going to have to move things around because they have to work with other users of the sea. And Liverpool, of course, is still a very, very significant port. Well, 12%, I think, 12 to 15% of oil still comes through Stanley Refinery. Of course, it's the fourth biggest port by volume, if I remember rightly as well. Very, very significant. And, of course, the connectivity to Ireland and Northern Ireland in particular would be a very, very sensitive issue. So I would suspect that these are things that are being discussed today at the British Irish Council.
Good. Okay. All right. Bonzo, appreciate that. Thanks for calling today.
Okay, cheers.
Good to hear from you. And a note in from Norman who said, Andy, we're talking about offshore substations. They have offshore substations. You were talking about the East Anglian wind farms. They have offshore substations located in and around the turbines there as well. But we're obviously going to have them here. Tony's on now. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Andy. Just to add a little bit into this discussion on wind farms, I doubt if any of the wind farm planners have thought about the fact that since we're trying to save the planet and we're not going to be able to do that, the likelihood is that sea levels will rise. I don't know when, but certainly in the future they're going to start to rise. The land is changing in height, but the sea level will overcome that. At some stage, those wind farms will be a lot closer to the water than the original design. So they're going to have to build them higher out of the water to avoid sea level rise. And if they do that, that means the foundation pile, or the drill that goes into the seafloor to get to rock that you can support this thing on with the side loads, is going to have to go a lot deeper. And I doubt if any of them have even considered that. They'll all be standard cookie cutter. We can do this. We'll put it in the plan, fine. And you're going to end up with this in the future. The other thing I see as a major problem is what happens when an oil tanker's plodding its way up to stand low and for whatever reason, storm, loses an engine, whatever, it runs into one of these wind farms. You're going to have the biggest environmental disaster you've seen since the Torrey Canyon.
Do you think the people behind these wind farms will take a blind bit of notice of the shipping lanes or the impact they're going to have on the shipping lanes in and out of Liverpool and Heysham?
As Bonzo says, they'll want to try and stick as many as they can on there to make it commercially more viable. And they don't really care because at the end of the day, it's all subsidised by the government. The government will give them money for the electricity because it's clean. Of course, it's not, but they'll say that. So from their perspective, they'll try and avoid any rules that limit anything. And I don't think governments, either in the UK or here, have got a clue of looking at that. If you look at our performance with Peel Holdings in Liverpool, with anything else we've done, it's hopeless. And the UK's the same. You know, it'll get passed on planning on the basis we don't want them on shore. And then, of course, we as the populace will end up with the mess in the years to come. But it won't be us, but it'll be our children. So good luck. I hope you talk to the school children about that.
All right. Tony, have a good weekend yourself. Take care.
You have a good weekend as well, Andy. All the best.
Okay, bye-bye. Sue dropped me a note in to say, my daughter's got young children. She says 5-year-olds and above have to have their dental care paid for privately if they can't get onto an NHS list. There are no vacancies at NHS dentists, and many parents won't be able to afford private care, so children above the age of 5 won't have dental care and will be neglected. Now, is this true? If so, it needs to be urgently addressed, and if necessary, care surely needs to be covered by government grants. Well, if you've got a child above 5 years of age, and do they have an NHS dentist? Do they have a right to immediately get NHS dental treatment? And have you put your above 5-year-old, if you have a private dental plan, will that be? A note in from yesterday, Andy called in yesterday and talked about the assistant waste manager in Douglas Corporation, City Council, whatever they're called, £40,000 for that. I'm applying for it, says this correspondent. Robbie said, I was in Tesco yesterday afternoon. Manx meat was all reduced, but more expensive than imported meat. Well, we'll get to that. We didn't quite get to the meat plant yesterday, but obviously Claire Barber's now taken over as chair, and Graham Crowe is vice chair of the meat plant. But obviously there's some turmoil going on at the meat plant. It depends how pivotal you think the meat plant is to Isle of Man commerce and life and agriculture, and whether we have the meat plant. I just wonder what your thoughts are regarding that. The construction of wind turbines, its installation and ongoing maintenance is anything but eco-friendly. The steam packet's going to have to use more fuel, says Texter 068, to navigate the wind farms, thus cancelling out remote benefits. This is scandalous that we have no say in the wind farms. If they damage the seabed and wildlife habitats, how can that be eco-friendly? Well, I'll just ask you, have you heard of any eco group, green group, or any political party or pressure group advocating on behalf of the seabed and the damage that is done to the seabed by wind turbines? Well, if you have, it's a bit late coming. They've been around for nigh on 30 years, haven't they, wind turbines? What a week it's been, says Dick. Laurie Hooper is back in health. Iceland's back in ShopRite. Whatever next? Horse trams back to the sea terminal?
Just take a look at the menu at Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion. Lunch is served 7 days a week, and there's so much choice. Whether you fancy a sandwich, a hearty meal, or coffee and homemade cake, Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion is a hidden gem tucked away down at Callow Point, where every visitor will receive a warm welcome, superb quality, and great value. For menus and opening times, visit their Facebook or click psmpavilion.im. Time for food, time to visit Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion.
This old house needed new windows. This old house needed a new door. And with DPM Conservatories, we got all that and more. Now our bills are lower and the house is warmer too. We're cleaner and we're greener since we swapped our old for new. Stunning A-plus rated replacement windows and doors, expertly fitted by DPM Conservatories. Phone 612-333 or find them on Facebook and swap your old for new.
King William's College's Bespoke Year 7 Taster Day is on Tuesday, the 29th of November. This is a great opportunity for Year 6 children to spend the day experiencing life at King William's College and all we have to offer, including our outstanding academic provision, excellent range of extracurricular activities, an average class size of 15. Register and find out more about our Year 7 Taster Day by calling 80110 or emailing admissions@kwc.im.
And next on the floor, it's Motormall. Can they impress the judges? Oh, great start! £2,000 free finance deposit on selected cars, followed by top part exchange prices. And will you look at that? Buy now and pay nothing for up to 10 months. The crowd are going crazy!
Think you can't afford a new car right now? You can at Motormall with their biggest offer ever. Nothing to pay for up to 10 months.
No need to look at the scores. It's a perfect 10 all this month at Motormall. Cool Road, Braddon.
With IOM Trike Tours, you can see the island in a totally different way. From the back of an amazing chauffeur-driven trike. And if you stay listening to Manx Radio this weekend, you can see it for free. Check out the Facebook page for a photo clue of a famous musical trio. Then be listening for the chance to call. Text your name and their name to 166177 and you can win a voucher for an IOM Trike Tour worth up to £150 for up to 2 hours, covering most of their tours, including the hugely popular TT Experience, with a winner drawn on Monday's Manx Radio Breakfast. It's a winning weekend on your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com. Helping Isle of Man companies and citizens to understand net zero targets and a green future.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. 26 minutes before one this Friday lunchtime, live from the Isle of Man. A note in. Thank you, 035 texter. Yes, of course, you can call in anytime you want. We want to hear your opinion. And Desmond, thank you for your contributions, Desmond. All the best to you. And thank you, texter 768. Anytime you want to call, texter 768. By all means, do get in touch. Give wind farms an inch and they'll take miles, says Desmond. Thank you for that. In the future, there won't be any oil tankers because, of course, we won't be using oil, so the wind farms will be safe, says Kevin Lazare. I wonder how long it's going to be before all those oil tankers are completely redundant. 20, 30, 40, 50 years, do you think, before there will be no more oil tankers? And in the future, when there are no more oil tankers, what do you think they'll fill them with? And Tony said the Isle of Man will get done over regarding the wind farms in the Irish Sea. We'll always end up at the bottom of the pile, says Tony 538. Well, look on the bright side. More texters in. And thank you, Dick, for that. Let's have a look, Dick. Can we have a wind farm free Friday? Well, we could try. It's just that they seem to be coming our way. And we haven't yet got a large onshore wind turbine on the Isle of Man. And when you consider the amount of wind that there is on the Isle of Man, where do you think they should stick one? If new employees at the meat plant with only a couple of days' experience are being given a knife and moved to the slaughter line, are the animals being slaughtered correctly and quickly, or are they suffering? They're only slaughtering 20% of what is expected. Are they working slowly? I'm concerned for the welfare of the animals, says L. Well, this report about the meat plants flags issues surrounding animals not being processed quickly enough, inefficiencies at the meat plant, and animals being sent across for slaughter instead. So here's the DEFA Minister, Claire Barber, answering the question, how important is it to change that?
So I think it's really important that people have that availability so that animals can be slaughtered on the island, you know, for our red meat industry. The reality we have is that we have a perfectly good plant, and we have really, you know, enthusiastic staff in there. What's really clear in the report is there's a real lack around some of the training and some of the opportunities for those staff, and that's absolutely imperative that we get a hold of. We provide those opportunities, we provide that training, and that will then allow us to speed that line up. And in a longer term, you know, I hope that we can see a real thriving future with the meat plant and actually see us increasing the throughput, not back to just the levels before when we had maybe a stronger slaughter line, but actually to even greater than that.
Now, one of the changes that's coming into effect, well, it's already in effect now, is that Claire Barber, the Minister of the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture, is now chair of the meat plant. Now, we've previously heard that political involvement in the plant is unnecessary. They didn't want politicians, you know, with their fingers all over the meat plant, and it should be transferred to Treasury instead. And in this report, it says the chair should be somebody with experience of beef and lamb production. Well, Claire Barber used to be a nurse, so is it right for the DEFA minister to be chairing the meat plant?
In the long term, absolutely not. This is very much a short-term bridging role that I would see. And part of that is around, you know, DEFA ultimately being the ones who have had the challenge with the increasing level of subvention. You know, it's myself who has to go to the Treasury Minister each time to ask for additional funds for the plant. And we're getting to a point where that's unsustainable. We're in a cost of living crisis. We're seeing every area of government, every department having to tighten the purse strings, and it's absolutely right that I'm assured that that money is delivering value for money across the island, as well as that contributor to the wider agriculture sector and food security, which is so fundamental and absolutely something that I'm committed to. So I don't see, you know, I've said on record before, I don't think politicians are the right people for the role, but in fact, in a very short bridging period, I did think it was the right thing to do.
Claire Barber, and also Claire Barber herself has chaired a committee that published a report last year. Not this report, another report, which highlighted the issues again on how the meat plant was run. Last year, she's been Agriculture Minister now for the past year. So why haven't they done something about it? Where has been the change?
Some of the challenges around the report we had previously was a lack of access to information. So one of the first things that we started on was looking at what that information was that was missing since I've been in the minister role. Then we obviously had to go out on a procurement exercise, get the team at Burnie Consultancy who'd gone in, spent 2 months, and we've released this report as soon as we possibly could. You know, I suppose with everything, if we could have done it quicker, I would have very much liked that. This has certainly been something that I've been invested and engaged in and talking with people within the industry for quite a long time now. But what is absolutely imperative, as I say now, is the action on the ground.
Well, your thoughts on this. And can I just ask you a blunt question? When was the last time you bought Manx meat? And do you buy Manx meat periodically? All the time? Or absolutely never? So do you think it's government's role to get involved in this? We're in it at the moment, and the state of the meat plant, the way that it's being run, the financial model behind the meat plant is a complicated one. It involves agriculture on the Isle of Man. It involves people on the Isle of Man consuming Manx meat. Any thoughts on it? Text, email, call, or WhatsApp. My concern, says John, is that livestock being sent off the island will end up being slaughtered inhumanely. I do hope I'm wrong, says John. Something for you to think about. My sister recently flew first class to New York, and on the menu in the first class cabin was Isle of Man Creamery Manx Cheddar. It was billed as a speciality. So why can't we get our prime beef sold into these kind of commercial enterprises? If the creamery can do it, well, why can't the meat plant? We have a prime quality product of our beef and lamb, but surely are we selling it properly? Literally selling it, says Texter 223. Well, certainly Mr. McLeod has been at the creamery now for quite a while, and the reputation of the creamery, if you ever fly Emirates, apparently in the Emirates lounge, there's Manx cheese, and as that correspondent said, being provided as a speciality. So the creamery's done it. Why can't we do something with the meat plant? For our health service to survive, we need the staff a good rate of pay, and then national insurance has to go up substantially and ring-fenced. So we'll see what happens with the new health and social care minister. When AgriMark, Patricia said, we were talking yesterday, I think Howard was mentioning Henry Robinson and AgriMark. When AgriMark was at Castle Hill, there was a bacon factory there. Why is there not a bacon factory now? With the amount of bacon imported to the Isle of Man, surely it would make sense to have a Manx bacon factory. What's happened to the amount of offal from the slaughtered animals, essential to human welfare for nutritional value, to say nothing about it going into dog food, says Patricia. And more comments coming in regarding this, again about Rob Callister. Mr. Callister was sacked as Health and Social Care Minister yesterday. Rob Callister was due to be on Man in Line on Monday. It was booked a wee while ago as Health and Social Care Minister, and Mr. Callister has just said, because it's been a difficult couple of days politically for him, that's an understatement, he's not going to be on Man in Line on Monday, but he will be with us on Monday, December the 12th. Pity David Ashford, this is Sue on 7-6, pity David Ashford can't be reinstated in health. He may have made a few mistakes, but nobody's perfect, and Mr. Ashford was always on top of the facts and figures and dealt with personal matters too. I think he did a very good job, says Sue. That's Sue's opinion. And we'll get back to loads of comments coming in today. And let's also say hi to, I think the wind farms have nothing to do with energy. It's about getting in foundations and for extending and connecting landmasses. Landmasses, says Victoria. I don't know about that. Well, I did get a note in from, where was it? It was Hugh, wasn't it? Hugh mentioned two things about wind farms. He said, if they put the wind turbines close enough together, we could put steps in between and walk to Liverpool. Thank you, Hugh. He also said, if I went on to a mountain with a big gun and shot birds, I would rightly get criticised. But it seems that the wind turbines can slaughter an innumerable quantity of birds and nobody bats an eyelid. It seems that this green issue absolutely trumps every other card. The public are discussing concerns about wind farms, says 313, but what's the government saying about the £200 million in the steam packet company in the Liverpool landing stage, says G. Well, obviously the landing stage is due to open next year, isn't it, at Princess Half-Tide Dock in Liverpool, and our new boat will be appearing fairly shortly, 4TT, they say. Good point. We'll keep our eye on what's happening and certainly the accounts with the steam packet, which also always made millions of pounds from Macquarie and for Jim Sherwood, didn't it, in the past with sea containers. Now it's making money for us. Over the past few years, says Chorus, I'm sorry, your text has split up into innumerable parts. So I'll try and piece that together. Regarding the meat plant, when are people going to realise that these animals are sentient beings? Animals feel pain and fear just as we do. I think we need to eat less meat and pay more to ensure that they have the best life and end of life they possibly can. Can't always be about cost. I'm not surprised that staff absence is at 25%. The scenes at the meat plant must be horrific, says Texter 326.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly and much more when you visit Watson's Nurseries this Christmas. Watson's Nurseries for cut and potted Christmas trees, including non-drop at great prices, along with decorative festive wreaths and superb gift ideas, like trees, fruit trees, large specimen trees and shrubs, and gift vouchers. They also stock logs and coals suitable for fires or wood-burning stoves, with delivery available. Call 801-812. Find something festive at Watson's Nurseries Greber, on the Peel side of Hawthorne Inn.
Concerned, confused or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
There's Switch and Save, compromising by switching from the familiar to something cheaper. And there's ShopRite Switch and Save. There's no comparison, because there's no compromise. Only ShopRite has hundreds of Sainsbury's alternatives to the usual brands. Quality you can be 100% sure of at up to 35% less. Save over a third at the checkout. With stores across the island, why shop anywhere else? ShopRite. Proudly locally owned.
This is my last will and testament. To my family, I leave years of financial headaches, large legal bills, and the prospect of having to sell our home to pay for it all.
Is that the legacy you choose to leave? Without a proper will and thorough planning, it could happen. Mann Benham Advocates, experiencing wills, probate and estate planning with a friendly service to make sure the future of your loved ones are secure. Don't put it off. Call 639350 for your free initial consultation with Mann Benham. Here for you.
Achilg, the Manx Gaelic, Chinian Amera, the mother tongue of Elian Vanin, the Isle of Man. You can catch up with more of Manx Radio's Manx language programmes in the weekly podcast Abershen Rish. Say that again.
Abershen Rish.
Shene, that's the one.
The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com. The Isle of Man's main net zero progress website.
Ian's with us now on Man in Line. Hi, Ian.
Good morning. I just caught an item before the adverts where somebody was claiming that innumerable birds were killed by wind farms. I've heard these sorts of statements many times, and my personal experience of walking near wind farms is I haven't seen lots of dead birds lying around. So I took the time and trouble to look on the internet and look up bird life losses to wind farms. And the most interesting figure I came across was an estimate by the RSPB, Royal Society for Protection of Birds, of deaths of birds from on-land wind farms in 2020. And that came out of a figure estimated around 100,000. Now, this clearly is a very large number. However, the very next paragraph says, this pales in comparison completely when we consider deaths of birds from domestic cats. That is currently estimated in the region of 55 million annually.
So what do you think that says?
I think it says if you're greatly concerned about loss of lives and birds, the first thing you can make sure is if you have a domestic cat, you enable it not to catch birds.
Do you think,
or
I mean, this is
literally catching birds.
Again, this is the RSPB. I mean, we can't obviously verify their statistics. We can't negate their statistics. So, but the other thing is there's another wildlife group that's claimed that wind turbines kill bats as well.
Yes, the particular type of bat that I read an article on that recently as well. Particular type of bat that is killed by or has been noted and found to have been killed is a bat of which we've only had two sightings on the Isle of Man.
Oh, I see. So it's not ours.
So the chances are exceedingly low. Either that or the wind farms are incredibly efficient and have wiped them out altogether, but I don't think that's likely.
Well, there is that, and of course, if they kill the birds at sea, nobody would ever know because they'll end up in the drink.
No, except I'm sure our fishermen would have reported if they'd seen great flocks of dead birds which had been macerated by a wind farm.
Okay, so, I mean, so does this concern you? Does it bother you that number would be killed by...
It concerns me that a desperate fossil fuel industry will have lobbyists continually ringing programme like this one and making claims without any substantiation or evidence.
So,
an innumerable number. What sort of figure is that? It's meaningless.
Unverified. Well, the thing is that the numbers vary from, I think, 1.2 million in America. But then again, at Ørsted, which of course are the people who make wind turbines, their websites say that the actual number is negligible. So we can assume it's somewhere in the middle. But it just depends. I mean, if those birds were killed by people shooting them, there'd surely be an outcry. But the fact they're killed by wind turbines, and I'm not advocating either side for wind turbines or not, but it is surely something that needs to be taken into context.
The figure we found on bird deaths from wind farms by university research in the USA were remarkably small compared to the estimated size of the bird populations. Remarkably small.
Okay.
Less than 1%, whereas something like 50% of them all, the mortality is in the first few months.
Well, as you say, and in the middle of all this, Ian, is the public, is the layperson, because they've also been, and again, I'm not advocating either way, but there was a survey that said that the low frequencies generated by wind farms warded off whales and sharks. Now, we haven't seen basking sharks in the Isle of Man for a while, so who knows?
Who does?
Exactly. All right, Ian, we appreciate your point, and thanks for raising that today. Ken's on with us now. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good afternoon. Just listening to all the spiel about wind farms and what have you, I've got my national newspaper in front of me here, which I always look the day after in case I miss something. It goes like this. Rishi ramps up drive for more offshore wind farms. Britain has joined an organisation pledging to boost offshore wind production to tackle climate crisis. Rishi Sunak has committed to link up with Global Offshore Wind Alliance, which has highlighted at this weekend's COP27. The UK is partnered with Belgium, Colombia, Germany, Ireland, Japan, Netherlands, Norway, and the USA. How's that, Andy?
Not the Isle of Man, obviously.
We got to come into the equation there somewhere.
Well, you would think wouldn't you?
There's our neighbour's island that are in the thick of all this. And on top of it, all these wind farms are majority made in China.
Well, there is that.
Well, they're using fossil fuels to make the blooming stuff.
And they're using fossil fuels to make the concrete as well, for the base.
Yeah, and also, fossil fuels are getting made to make these battery vehicle cars as well. It's a nonsense. Bye, Andy. Bye.
Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. 92% of the batteries, the capacity for the batteries that go into cars, by the way, are made in the Far East, the majority in China, then there's Japan, and then there is Korea. 92%. 8% of batteries are made outside the Far East. Can't afford to buy Manx meat, says 333. Too expensive. Not surprised Tesco's reducing it. It's too expensive. Well, it depends what you mean by too expensive. There's costing a lot of money, and then there is expense. So what do you do? I just want to get a quick word in, by the way, from Tim Johnston. Okay, Tim Johnston, former Manx NFU president. It's been highlighted some staff are only turning up 75% of the time at the meat plant. There are inadequate discipline procedures and a lack of ability to sack people due to recruitment issues. Turning up for work is the most basic part of keeping a job. Tim Johnston.
How bad does it have to get? Do you get a situation where this is happening? It just shows you the terribly low morale there is within that plant, within that organisation. And it's very sad to hear, because there'll be some very good people in that plant, people wanting to do their best, and it must be incredibly demoralising for them. And I really do feel for them at the moment. And I think we have to remember the positives, and there are positives that come out of this. We know that the fundamentals of the plant are right. We know that, you know, the report talked about the positivity within the procurement part of it. And again, I come back to one of the key things here is it recognised the quality of livestock that were coming into that plant. So farmers are doing what they're meant to be doing, but they've been fundamentally let down.
Tim Johnston, Aaron Michael, MHK, former Manx NFU president. Well, the situation regarding the meat plant affects us all, remember. Now, just to reiterate, Rob Callister, MHK, was due to be in on Monday on Man in Line as Minister of the DHSC. Obviously, all that changed yesterday as he's no longer Minister for DHSC. We extended the and kept the invitation open, but Rob Callister says it's been a difficult couple of days, so he's going to hold fire, but he will be with us on Man in Line Monday, December 12th as a backbench MHK. So we're back with an open line on Monday. The £42 million for a greener island should be spent on reconnecting the Peel line, says John. Can you imagine that? Nice electric trams to Peel. Who'd have thought it? That's it. Thanks to Chris Quirk producing today. Have a great weekend.
WIN